Hey, gang, thanks for listening to the spinoff. So brace yourself. It's award season time again. And if you need help navigating the flurry of film awards coming down the pike, I've got a podcast for you to check out. It's called The Treatment, hosted by Elvis Mitchell. And Elvis goes beyond the plot to understand what inspires actors, filmmakers, producers, and others to do what they do. You can find The Treatment on KCRW's iTunes page. From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Schneider, the executive editor of TV Guide magazine, and this is The Spinoff. Joining me on the podcast, as always, is Joe Adalian of Vulture.com. Hello, Joe.
Well, hello, Michael.
And you guys may notice we're back a little sooner than usual doing another spinoff. Well, we're happy to tell you that we're now going to be doing these shows twice a month, two episodes a month. One episode will continue to be the format you know and love, a deep dive into the world of television with another friendly TV journalist. But then as a bonus episode, Joe and I will also be sitting down with someone from inside the industry, a person who can bring a unique perspective from their area of TV expertise.
Wow, and it's sort of like it's like a spinoff of the spinoff almost.
There you go. It's spinoff 2.0. So we're hoping to have showrunners on, studio execs, writers, maybe even some on-screen talent. And our first guest this time out couldn't be more timely. You know, the last episode that we taped was right before the big Jon Stewart news came down. So unfortunately, we didn't address it in that episode. So now we're going to over-address the entire late-night landscape. And I can think of no one in the world better to chat with about that than Mr. Rick Ludwin, who oversaw late night and special programming at NBC for more than 30 years, from 1980 to 2012. And he brings a lifetime of late night knowledge. And of course, he's the executive who also brought Seinfeld to our TV screens. We're thrilled to have him here as our first guest. Hello, Rick.
Woohoo! I'm thrilled to be here.
Oh, well, thanks for being here. So
you can't actually see this, Rick, but Mike and I are actually, well, you can see Mike, but we're actually doing the Wayne and Garth We're Not Worthy thing.
We're not worthy. Joe and I have been, you know, we're TV geeks forever, obviously.
And
me too.
And you know, just as you know, Jesse the Body Ventura, your actual title is Rick the Man Ludwin. So just
Rick.
All right, that's enough shameless kissing.
The Man Ludwin. Well, Rick, you're speaking of being the man. You're just back from New York, where you attended the Saturday Night Live 40th anniversary celebration, and it truly looked like the party of the year. And the special attracted more than 23 million viewers, which was kind of like the Super Bowl of comedy or the Oscars of comedy. So everyone was there, and Rick, I even saw you on camera at one point. You made the screen talking to Robert Smigel, of course, famous of Saturday TV Funhouse, and of course Conan and Triumph, the insult talking dog, and more. So first off, give me a quick report. What was it like on scene?
It was very cool. I was so pleased to have been invited to attend, and it was like, as was said many times on the air, it was like a family reunion, and I saw people who I haven't seen in a long time, and I was associated with the show for such a long period of time that I know several generations of the cast and the writers and the producers, and it was tremendous fun to be there and very classy. And not only the air show itself, but there was a party afterwards at the Plaza Hotel, which was crazy. They did a jam session on stage, which has been talked about several times on the Jimmy Fallon show and on the Seth Meyers show. The jam session consisted of Paul McCartney and Taylor Swift and Jimmy Fallon and Michael Bolton, and then Prince got up. They all performed, and it was unbelievable. It was just really fun to be a part of.
Feel a little bit like a proud papa to some degree?
Well, Lorne Michaels is the proud papa,
right.
The creator of the show and still is the executive producer. But I sure felt like a family member of long standing, and I was proud for all of them.
How would you, I mean, this is a show that, like you mentioned, it spans generations, and Lorne Michaels always likes to say that your favorite cast is the one that you watched when you were in high school.
That's
and,
right.
And I think that's kind of true for probably both Joe and I, because I still look fondly back at the years of Dana Carvey and Nora Dunn and Phil Hartman and that whole crew is sort of, that's my SNL.
Right.
But how do you attribute its staying power?
I think Lorne Michaels' track record at identifying and nurturing comedic talent is unmatched in show business and certainly unmatched in television. He is able to spot people who have potential and then nurture that potential in that Darwinian situation that is Saturday Night Live, where the strongest survive. And he has been masterful at repopulating the cast and the writers and the producers over all these years, and I think that's what keeps the show fresh. You are always able to say to viewers, you haven't seen this yet, and here's something new. And more often than not, every show produces some sketch or some catchphrase or some joke that people are talking about the next day. And that has kept the show fresh and relevant for 40 years.
Well, Rick, one question I'm wondering is almost everything in television gets big competition that takes it down, right? I mean, you know, now we have The Voice on NBC sort of taking the place of American Idol as the big preeminent talent show on TV. Yet Saturday Night Live, even though there have been many sketch comedy shows, some of which have been successful, and we haven't seen anyone successfully take on or really aggressively take on Saturday Night Live, even if not in the same time slot, with another live sketch comedy. What? Is everyone just afraid of not being able to be SNL? I mean, do you think that maybe someone should at some point consider trying to launch an alternative, to launch competition?
I think probably the overriding hurdle is cost, that it's so expensive to do a live show, particularly in the middle of Midtown New York City. Mm-hmm. Cost is probably the main factor that has kept other competitors from trying to take on Saturday Night Live. And even if you were to try to do a sketch show maybe on another night, not necessarily opposite Saturday Night Live, it's very, very expensive. And you have to be prepared to spend a lot of money in terms of production. And, of course, you need Lorne Michaels or you need someone of that caliber who is going to be expensive. And so I think the cost factor is probably the most important thing that has prevented a lot of competitors.
So, Rick, we've heard a lot of stories through the years about how SNL might have been canceled at some point. But tell me, what was truly its lowest moment and what saved it?
Yes, there was a point in the early 80s. As I'm sure you know, Lorne was the executive. Well, at the time, I believe he was called the producer of the first 5 years of Saturday Night Live from 1975 to 1980. At the end of that 79-80 year in television, Lorne and the cast, the remaining original cast, all left the show, and a woman by the name of Jean Dominion took over the production of the show in the following year, and then Dick Ebersol took over for several years. And they tried their best, but it was, as I think everyone agrees, was a period where there was, of course, tremendous change, and the show came close to being canceled. There was a point at which Brandon Tartikoff, who was my friend and my boss at NBC, was telling Bernie Brillstein, we may have to cancel the show because the ratings were such that it was no longer, or it was about to become, too expensive to produce based on how many people were watching. But Brandon was convinced to continue with the show. Lorne returned in 1985 and slowly but surely rebuilt the cast once again. And, of course, the rest is history.
Yeah, if Lorne hadn't returned, I can't imagine we'd be celebrating the 40th anniversary of SNL right now.
It's hard to imagine that it could have gone for as long as it has without the guidance of the original creator of the show, yes.
When you say Brandon was convinced by you?
At that point, I was not in charge of late night. I certainly hoped that the show would continue, but it became, once again, getting back to that, the economics of it, it became an issue that was partly creative and partly financial. And at that point, both of those factors were not promising in terms of a continuation of the show.
I'm wondering, you know, you talk about how the show might not have continued without Lorne. At some point, you know, Lorne is now over 70 or at 70. George Burns was lived till he was 100 and was working most of those years. So maybe hopefully Lorne will go 30 more years. But, you know, someone wrote in one of the reviews that Saturday Night Live at this point is an institution that will last as long as TV does. But what about Saturday Night Live after Lorne? Do you think there's a transition plan in place? And what if you were still there, what would you advise NBC? How do you replace Lorne Michaels? And who wants to step in? Do you bring someone who's been on the show, maybe a talent like a Tina Fey or a Conan O'Brien or Seth Meyers? I mean, what do you think would be the best way to sort of replace that role?
Well, first of all, Lorne Michaels, when he was asked in an interview not long ago, how long do you intend to stay with the show? Lorne Michaels answered by saying, well, I'm going to stay with the show until I feel I can't continue to contribute to it creatively and until I feel I've done everything I can do and that I can't bring anything new to it. And then I'll stay about 5 or 6 more years. And I believe that to be true, by the way. But to answer your question, to me, Saturday Night Live is now a franchise like the Today Show or the Tonight Show. And that is to say, the on-air talent may change, the production people may change, but the franchise goes on. And I think Saturday Night Live is in that category now. And you've named a couple of the people that I would nominate to be considered to run the show when the day comes that Lauren decides he wants to step down or he wants to be in a consulting position and no longer day-to-day on the show. I think we're, as I say, many years away from that, but it is an institution that should continue and I hope will.
Yeah, those are great names. And I would add Mike Shoemaker, the yes. executive mm-hmm. producer of Seth Meyers, obviously, yes. to the list as well, who was at SNL for many, many years. So there's no shortage of people who could potentially fill those shoes.
But I think so.
Let's talk about Lorne Michaels, because mm-hmm. it's sort of fascinating to see the evolution of him into the king of late night and the fact that he now is the executive producer of The Tonight Show, of Late Night, and then, of course, of SNL. It wasn't that long ago that he was mostly seen as the SNL guy. He wasn't in prime time. He wasn't doing any other show. I mean, how did we get to this point? I guess it kind of started with Conan.
You know, I think the people who have owned NBC over the years, starting with RCA and then General Electric and certainly Comcast, I think Comcast, when they fully took over NBC in 2011, I think they view Lorne Michaels as one of those crown jewels that made them pay as much as they paid to buy NBC Universal. I think they view Lorne Michaels as one of the main reasons to have made this purchase in the first place. And it makes complete sense that they would go to him and say, what should we do about this? We need you to do a primetime situation comedy. We need you to do this. We need you to do that. So I think Lorne is busier than he's ever been. And good for him. And he deserves it. So I think that is a relationship that is beneficial to both parties.
Well, you know, speaking of The Tonight Show, we were talking about this before we started this. It's been literally a year since Jimmy Fallon took over that telecast. How did he change the game?
Jimmy, as we know, is enthusiastic. He's extraordinarily talented. He's funny, accessible, and I think he has confounded some critics who, when it was announced that Jimmy was going to take over the 12:30 show on NBC back in 2009, there were critics who said he's a lightweight, he laughs at his own sketches, and it'll never work. And he has proven them all wrong. And he has brought a new audience, not only in terms of the younger end of the demographics, the 18 to 34 and 18 to 49, the numbers are up from what they were a little over a year ago, but also in the 50-plus demographic, the numbers are larger than they were a little over a year ago. And to me, the show is a fun place. If I'm a viewer sitting at home, The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, starring Jimmy Fallon, it looks like a fun place to be. He's having fun. The guests are having fun. They play these games. They don't just sit in a chair. They do things. The roots are having fun. The studio audience is having fun. You just want to be a part of this. And I think it's contagious, and I think he appeals to all ages.
Yeah, I think part of the speculation back in 2009 was we'd seen performers try to do the talk show host role in the past. You know, Chevy Chase comes to mind. There's plenty of shows that were hosted by performers, not comedians, not broadcasters, but performers that it just didn't work out. And maybe it just ultimately wasn't suited to their skills. But for some reason, Jimmy was able to pull that off.
I agree. And I think they've done a wonderful job. They deserve their success. And they work really hard. You can see those pre-tapes that they do. They're very difficult and they're time-consuming. But they do them because that's what the audience has come to expect. And they, frankly, have set the bar for other shows who are trying late night. And those other shows will be compared to The Tonight Show. And is it as fun? Is it as energetic? Is it as ambitious as The Tonight Show is? And they've set the bar high.
Is it going to be difficult, though, for when Dave Letterman came on at CBS, he came on and immediately dominated and then quickly, as we know, fell back behind Jay and stayed there. Mm-hmm. And in about 9 months or so, Stephen Colbert is going to come in and give Jimmy a competition that he doesn't really have now. Do you think it's going to be tough for him to maintain the momentum? And do you think it's going to be a challenge?
We certainly – I'm a consultant to NBC now, but I'm saying we I'm part of the team. But I like to think of myself as part
of the
team.
Once a peacock, always a peacock.
Exactly. NBC has formidable challengers coming into the time period. There's no question that Stephen Colbert and all the other new hosts in late night, sure, they're going to be a challenge. These are talented, funny people who are not to be dismissed. So, yes, it is a challenge, but I think you can see in the show that Jimmy Fallon and the Tonight Show people and Seth Meyers are doing right now is, I think, up to the challenge. And, yes, there will always be competitors, but what I've found over the years is that late night, I think, is a somewhat elastic time period in the sense that a good show that comes on a competing network or a competing cable channel doesn't necessarily cannibalize what's already out there. I think the audience, the pie gets bigger. So I expect that the competitors that will be coming on in the next few months and in the next year or so will live up to the challenge and live up to the expectations and will be good, but that won't necessarily diminish the size of the Tonight Show audience. I think the pie will get bigger.
Although the overall pie for all of TV seems to be shrinking to some degree, or at least, you know, live viewership is shrinking and it's been said by many people before, not me now, but that competition for these late night shows now isn't just each other, but it's everything that's on in the history of television. So much is available now for immediate streaming. You know, can the marketplace support three strong, expensive late night shows? Do you think that 10 years from now we're still going to have this sort of environment? Can they all be left standing? I mean, for many years in the history of TV, we only had one real late night show, and we survived fine on that. Do you think the last 20 years have sort of been an aberration, and that, you know, 10 years from now we'll be looking back at the end of the golden age and something different?
I think there are people who would have said that just before Jimmy Fallon premiered, and some mm-hmm. people might have said when Johnny Carson retired that, well, they'll never be as big an audience as there is now, and the things are certainly going to diminish. And, of course, when Jay Leno left and Jimmy Fallon took over, there were those who thought that, well, this is the end of the golden era, and mm-hmm. the pie is smaller now, and there are fewer people who are watching television in that way anymore. And then Jimmy defied all those predictions, and the ratings went up. So I think that if the product is good, the audience will want to see it. If the product is not good, they won't. It's no more complicated than that. And if the competitors who are coming on the air are good, and I expect that they will be because there are talented people producing and starring in them, I think that the audience will respond. And in the same way that Craig Ferguson on CBS at 12:30 carved out an audience of his own, it didn't beat the 12:30 show on NBC, but still it had a respectable audience that liked it and was loyal to it. I think that's what will happen when the competitors come into the time period, if they're good.
Well, I want to pick up a little more on discussing the generational shift that's taking place right now in late night, and also talk a little bit more about late night transitions, something you know very well, Rick. We'll talk more after the break. From KCRW, this is The Spinoff.
Immerse yourself in Rhythm Planet, hosted by Tom Schnabel, the world music blog and podcast dedicated to history, storytelling, and, of course, the music. Check it out now at kcrw.com/rhythmplanet.
And we're back. It's The Spinoff. I'm Michael Schneider, the executive editor of TV Guide magazine and also a contributor to the new website TV Insider. You can find us at tvinsider.com. Here with me is Joe Adalian of Vulture.com and special guest Rick Ludwin, who for more than 30 years was the head of late night at NBC. So, Rick, I wanted to talk to you about Jay Leno's departure. First off, what's interesting to me is, you know, we all sort of were saying NBC, You've got a great audience here. Why are you going to give that up? You know, you're number one in late night. Why mess with success? There's a this is a demo that still watches late night. You're going to give that up. They managed to somehow keep most of that audience while bringing in Jimmy's younger audience. But talk about that gamble and how nervous were folks at the time. Are we really giving up the number one show in late night?
I happen to believe that these franchises, like The Tonight Show, which has been on the air for more than 60 years now, I think that it's something that needs to be refreshed and needs to be reinvented from time to time. And that to keep the franchise fresh, there comes a time when one host has to hand it off to the next one. And the next host brings a new comedic sensibility and a new energy to the show. And that has to be done from time to time. I don't believe in late night that you stay with any show until it is no longer number one and it's number two or number three or, God forbid, lower than that. Because the ratings in late night, for the most part, usually move very glacially. And that once a pattern is set, you might have that same pattern in place for the next 10 years. So I believe in making these transitions before the audience tells you that you should have made it 3 years ago. So I was one of the advocates for the change from Jay Leno to Conan O'Brien.
Yeah.
And I was certainly in favor of the idea of Jimmy Fallon becoming the host of The Tonight Show, because I think he was ready, and that's the way these transitions have worked over the 60 years of the show, that you get The Tonight Show when it's number one, and then you hand it off to the next person when it's number one, and it's The Tonight Show. And that franchise has to continue and has to be kept fresh.
Now the Conan situation, I know, has been dissected to death, but we have many years of perspective now to sort of look back and say what happened in 2010. Give me your perspective on what happened and why that ultimately just didn't pan out.
There were a couple of factors, as we all know. Management of NBC at the time wanted to keep Jay Leno, and we're worried that if Jay moved to another network, he would be a formidable competitor on another network, and it might hurt The Tonight Show. So the offer was made to Jay Leno to do a 10 p.m. show Monday through Friday on NBC. The 10 p.m. Jay Leno show did not work in terms of the ratings, and the affiliates were crystal clear. I was on several of the phone calls where it was discussed with the affiliates, and they wanted to have a change made. They wanted NBC to change the 10 o'clock time period because 10 o'clock leads into their 11 o'clock late local news, and the numbers that were being delivered by the Jay Leno show were perceived by the affiliates as not being what they thought they were going to be, and they felt it was hurting their 10 o'clock or their 11 o'clock news.
Right.
So they made it clear to us that either they were going to make the change or we were going to make the change. And by they making the change, I mean that they were threatening or hinting that they would preempt the Jay Leno 10 o'clock show and run something of their own.
Yeah, their own local newscast at 10 o'clock.
Exactly. Probably. So a change had to be made, and it got made. The other factor involved was that the Conan O'Brien numbers slipped when Jay Leno left the show the first time. And I think it was a cause and effect between those two factors that I'm talking about. But colleagues who were then in charge of NBC decided to change it back. Well, the first, they wanted to have Conan move the start time of The Tonight Show to 12:05. Conan said, if it starts at 12:05, it's no longer The Tonight Show, it's The Tomorrow Show.
Right, right.
Conan refused to do that and left NBC. The plan was to have Jay Leno do a half hour from 11:35 to 12:05 and then have The Conan Tonight Show start at 12:05. Conan refused to do that. And so Conan left, and Jay Leno was reinstated as the host of The Tonight Show at 11:35.
What do you think was different with Jay this time out? Was he just ready to go now for 4 years later, that he wasn't ready to leave in 2010?
I think that's exactly what it was. That's certainly what he has said in interviews, that he realized that some of the references, the pop culture references, he wasn't quite familiar with them, and that he felt this time around, it was the right time for him to step down. And of course, he hasn't left show business. He continues to do his stand-up act and is doing a show on CNBC, I believe it is, basically a cable version of Jay's Garage, which he was doing as a streaming telecast for several years. So he's still very much in the business and still in business with NBC.
Rick, can I ask you about the original decision to sort of do this transition plan with Conan over 5 years? And when that was presented to Conan, that was a way also in part of making sure that Conan didn't leave NBC.
That's right, yes.
And there was a logic to it, especially with what you were talking about setting a succession plan in place. And I was someone who actually agreed at the time that it made a lot of sense. You want your Tonight Show transitions to happen when you're still at number one and before the host had been there too long, and it all made sense. Looking back in retrospect now, though, it did sort of set Conan up as sort of this long-term usurper to Jay and set in place a lot of these bitter feelings between the two men, and also meant that Conan, before he made the jump to the Tonight Show, would be doing a late night show for 5 more years, so that by the time he took over, he'd been doing late night for 15, 16 years.
That's right.
Which is a long amount of time. Jimmy Fallon, hasn't been. So Conan didn't feel very fresh when he took over, and people's positions on him were sort of crystallized. 5 years before that, when you had made the deal, he was at his peak. He had really arrived. Do you think maybe in retrospect, if you were Conan's agents, maybe it would have been better if Conan said, you know what, it's clearly not the time for Jay Leno to be leaving the Tonight Show now. I need to move on and do something else with my life and challenge myself. It's time for me to do what Dave Letterman ultimately did when he didn't get the Tonight Show. Move on to another network and start a competing show. And he probably would have lost to Jay for several years, but eventually he might have established in a way that, over at Fox or over at ABC, he could have established his own sort of beachhead there, because Conan was really pretty hot five years before he took over the Tonight Show. So do you think maybe in retrospect, and again, hindsight is always easy to offer, but do you think that maybe that was a mistake for his team, sort of being the man in waiting, that it sort of diminishes value? So at the time that he got there, it wasn't quite the same thing.
No, I don't agree with that. It's impossible to overestimate the appeal of becoming the host of The Tonight Show, This legendary television franchise, very small club of those who have been permanent hosts of The Tonight Show. And Conan was getting offers, as you point out, from other networks while he was on The Late Night Show. Bob Wright, who was then the CEO of NBC, would say to me in conversations, how are we going to keep Conan O'Brien at NBC? And I felt the same way. I felt Conan was a valuable property and had set the comedy agenda in the same way that Dave Letterman had done at 12:30 on NBC. And I wanted him to become the host of The Tonight Show. So I don't think we can underestimate how important it is to a performer to be asked to become the host of The Tonight Show. And I think waiting 5 years was part of what Conan was willing to do to become the host of The Tonight Show.
Rick, what have you made? I mean, it's funny to think about The Tonight Show sort of triggering so many wars through the years. It's this thing that everyone has always wanted. And so we've had these quote-unquote late-night wars. I mean, do you ever stand back and say, I can't believe I survived several of these skirmishes that led to books and movies. And you know, how astounding that this day part, this one little show, caused so much drama.
It's like the Iron Throne of television.
I have referred to it as the soap opera that won't end. And I found out early on at NBC that The Tonight Show just held a special place in viewers' minds, even viewers who perhaps haven't watched the show in a while. There's still a personal connection between viewers and whoever is the host of the show. And viewers take it personally when someone is leaving or someone perhaps is perceived as having been mistreated. That viewers, even, as I say, even viewers who perhaps haven't watched the show regularly in a while, still take that as something that happened to a member of their family. And I also found out that when you change the kind of coffee cups that are used on the set, that becomes a story in the New York Daily News. that people really care about this day part and care about NBC's franchises in particular, because they've just been around as long as anyone can remember. As long as that electronic box has been in their living room, there's been The Tonight Show. And it's important. And everything gets scrutinized and and if you want to put it another way, gets blown out of proportion when it comes to The Tonight Show.
Yeah. Well, what do you make? I mean, CBS now is about to undergo its own first major transition. Obviously, they've had several on the Late Late Show, but for Letterman to be leaving later this year, what do you make of how they've handled it so far and the choice of Stephen Colbert?
I think CBS has handled it masterfully. Les Moonves, who, as we all know, is as savvy a network executive as has ever been, I think handled it correctly, which is that the decision about when to step down from The Late Show on CBS was Dave Letterman's. And I think that's the way you have to play it.
Yeah.
And I think Stephen Colbert was a terrific choice, who, as we know, is, first of all, he happens to be a nice guy, and he happens to be talented and funny. Obviously, this transition from the character that he played on Comedy Central to Stephen Colbert, the actual person, is something I'm sure they're figuring out now. But I think that was a brilliant choice on CBS's part, and I think they're going to do well. And what's interesting is when Dave steps down, and Joe, correct me if I'm wrong, but when Dave steps down in May of this year, the longest-serving late-night host in television is going to be Conan O'Brien, who will at that point have been on the air 22 years and counting.
That's right. And Jimmy Kimmel will be the longest tenured host on the same show because once...
Well, good point.
Once Jon Stewart leaves the Daily Show as well, you know, Kimmel started in 2003, and that'll be the longest running show. It's truly a generational shift that we're seeing right now. And isn't it interesting that it all happens within the same two-year time frame?
It's amazing that so many of these hosts have changed over the last few months and over the next few months, now, of course, including Jon Stewart. It's amazing that it's all happened in this relatively short period of time.
Is it just a sign of that's just a generational shift and we're just moving on and you know, that era is over and we're now entering this whole new era?
I'm not sure it's because that sounds like people sat down and decided to do it this way. I don't think so. I think it's just the roll of the dice and the way things turned out. I don't think there's any greater plan that's attached to it, but I guess there could be.
And yet, with all this change, though, what's interesting to me still, and I know this is common criticism you hear, is the whole idea that all these hosts now are still mostly men. In fact, they're all men. Joan Rivers was the only person who sort of successfully had a network show, a semi-network show on the fledgling Fox network, and Chelsea Handler had a show on E! For a little bit. She's, of course, going now to Netflix with whatever show that's going to be. You know, is there an answer to the question of why isn't there more? I mean, I don't know. What you know, are people wrong to sort of look to late night for diversity in gender? Do you think that some smart network is going to realize that having a woman as host can bring in a whole, as you've said before, expand the pie and bring a whole new vision? And even some of the writers on the show, too. I notice when I look at the credits for these new shows, the show that James Corden's putting together, and almost everyone's a man. I mean, difficult position. We're all three white men talking about this here, but what do you think, Rick?
I think that, first of all, I would correct you in just one small way, and I would say Chelsea Handler was more than around for just a little bit.
True.
I mean, she was, I think, very successful on the E! Channel, and it would still be on the E! Channel, except she chose to move on. So I would say that that's the most recent and the most successful woman who has hosted a late night show recently. But to answer your question, it's not fair and it's not logical that there wouldn't be more women and more people of color hosting shows in late night. For instance, if Tina Fey or Amy Poehler weren't so successful doing their motion pictures and television series and all the other things, best-selling books, if Tina Fey or Amy expressed interest in late night, I'm sure they would be snapped up in 2 seconds.
Is there also an issue of, you know, think about how I remember in 1989 when Arsenio Hall came on the scene and completely revolutionized that world. And you know, I was in high school at the time, and that became my show. It was my generation, you know, young, hip, African-American comic. It was just so exciting and different. And I'm a little surprised that we don't see any sort of alternative come in these days. But is it just because young people aren't watching TV the same way anymore? And they're not going to necessarily watch a late-night host. They're going to watch clips online, they're going to watch YouTube, they maybe have their hosts, they're just not hosting late night shows.
The one thing about late night, though, that I think is interesting is that people assume that the audience in late night is all young. And it's exactly the same as the primetime audience,
right,
except smaller. It's exactly the same demographic spread as you would find in primetime. And one of the things I always say to producers and writers and hosts who work on these late night shows on NBC is that you don't want to do a show that makes it seem like the viewer has stumbled into the basement of some fraternity house and everyone is just sort of sitting around and it's very loose and it's very anarchistic and it's very guerrilla kind of television, because you need to appeal to everybody and you need to, particularly on a broadcast network. And if a 35 or 40-year-old feels he or she is not invited to the party, they're not going to watch. And that's why it was a conscious decision on the part of Conan O'Brien, even when he started at 12:30 back in 1993, to be in a suit. That's why the band was in suits. That's why the Jimmy Fallon is now in a suit. And that you don't want people over a certain age to feel you're not invited to this party, stay away, because you will not be successful on broadcast television.
Yeah. That's interesting. You got to respect the day part.
Absolutely.
You know, someone else who completely changed the game, Jon Stewart.
Yes.
So the big news that Jon Stewart is leaving The Daily Show. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we talk about how these are all franchises and the hosts can be replaced. But Jon Stewart was a franchise. It became not just The Daily Show. Everyone was watching Stewart. So how do you replace someone like that?
Well, you know, the same thing happened when Dave Letterman left the 12:30 show on NBC. And Dave Letterman, talk about someone who was at the top of his game at the time. That was Dave Letterman. There were established performers who wouldn't go near the notion of trying to replace Dave Letterman.
Yeah. You guys came close with Dana Carvey, right?
I mean, I was an advocate of Dana Carvey taking over the show. He had a deal with NBC at the time. He wound up obviously not doing the late night show on NBC, wound up doing a primetime sketch show on ABC, which did not last very long. But Dana was then and is now. Talk about the list of talented, funny people who appeal to a broad audience. I think Dana Carvey is that person, is one of those people. So, as I say, when Dave announced he was leaving NBC, the same thing happened. That people were saying no one can possibly step into the shadow of Dave Letterman, in the same way that people are now saying who can possibly step into the shadow of Jon Stewart on The Daily Show. However, if they choose correctly and choose wisely and continue to turn out a good product, they can make that transition.
That's going to be a tough one, right? Because, I mean, people feel so passionate about that show, and they feel like it's not just their comedy outpost, but it's also where they get their news. And if the new host comes in and does anything even a slightly different, if the people watching feel like they're not getting their fill of the same sort of biting commentary and satire that Stewart gave, then that person's just automatically – I feel bad for whoever's going to fill that job, because that's not going to be easy.
Rick, do you think – Do you think it's better to get someone who's not such a known quantity with such a person? Because Jon Stewart had a small following when he took over The Daily Show. He had the failed MTV show and syndicated show. But, you know, Conan O'Brien was someone who nobody knew, and he did fine. I mean, so do you think it's better for them to either to look from within or someone who's not very well known as opposed to a big name? Do you think a big name sort of, especially for a half-hour show, just elevates the stakes too much?
Well, going back to that Dave Letterman departure from NBC – it became clear to us that whoever got the job to replace Dave Letterman at 12:30 on NBC back in 1993 was going to be an unknown, because no performer who had an established career in comedy was willing to attempt to replace Dave Letterman. So it became clear to us, at least in that case, that whoever took over for Dave was going to be an unknown. And of course, Conan was an unknown at that point. And the same could be true for Daily Show. On the other hand, if the right star were to come along and say, yes, I want to do that, of course you're going to go that route as well. But the point is, I think you can do it either way. And
okay.
And that if television tends to make its own stars, so the audience, I think, enjoys discovering someone and making them their own. Like you were saying, when you were in high school and you saw Arsenio Hall and that became your show, I'm talking now to Michael, that same thing can happen here. It can work with an unknown.
Yeah, and by the way, that happened with us with Conan when I was in college. So it was the same thing. And I'm going to be really interested now to see what CBS does with James Corden taking over the Late Show.
Yes.
That's someone who's sort of known, if people saw Into the Woods and they've kind of heard of him, but he's still not a household name. So there's an opportunity there for CBS to do a different kind of show, but also for people to kind of stumble across it and feel like I've discovered something.
That's right.
Well, Rick, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
This was very entertaining, and we appreciate the conversation. That's Joe Adalian, my partner in crime here on The Spinoff, the West Coast editor of Vulture.com, and Rick Ludwin, the former head of Late Night at NBC. You can follow Joe on Twitter at TV Mojo and Rick at RICLUD, sort of the shorthand of Rick Ludwin. And I'm Michael Schneider, the executive editor of TV Guide magazine and contributor to TVInsider.com, and my Twitter handle is at Franklin Avenue. And that's it for this edition of The Spinoff. This podcast is produced by Caitlin Parker. Melissa Morton is our technical director, with production assistance today from Ray Guarna. You can hear past episodes of The Spinoff on iTunes, Stitcher, and pretty much everywhere you can download podcasts. You can also hear it online at kcrw.com and on demand with the KCRW smartphone app. Until next time, this is The Spinoff, signing off.